persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Now, folks, you may be opposed to gun rights. That's your right. You might not believe in God. Well, that's your right, too. But when someone is breaking into your house in the middle of the night, you're going to be calling someone with a gun and pray they get there in time. I forget who sent that to me, but thank you. Didn't get to tell you why. I see the duck in the Donald, so we're going to do that today. Criticizing Trump. Apparently, Trump is more thin-skinned than I thought he was. What a wimp! Rarely have we witnessed a political candidate so sensitive, thank you, Savage, to how he's being treated by others. Calm down. It's one thing to, you know, take on the press, which is something Cruz has done a few times with deftness, turning a question back on them and quickly dismantling the premise of the question while debunking the evident accusation within it, buried in it, and so on. And Carson, too, by the way, who has charmingly disarmed and redirected questioners, and Rand Paul, who nukes them with a bomb blast of facts, or Walker. Lately, Walker's fallen into a lot of "they're not treating me nice" whining of his own. Only in his case, at least, it's not about tough questions asked by a girl. Come on, calm down. Just getting you ready for the show. It's something else, however, to whine about not being treated nicely, you know. Right? You know, you've not been very nice to me. That's about as lame and unpresidential as anything I've ever heard from the old bummer, who didn't want a whole lot of talking going on out there. But that is, in some measure, a personal taste sort of thing. It's about style, class, dignity, which are, I admit, in some measure, subjectively measured. And by my ruler, I don't think Trump has developed these traits to any degree beyond the superficial. Perhaps I should say, beyond what money can buy. At the risk of being accused that I'm making a career out of criticizing Trump, I'm going to pile on today. So if you are a Trumpophile, but like so many, addicted to your weekly brain massage, you can't help but listen, be forewarned. I'm going to be working on a very tight knot in your brain, and it will likely hurt a little. But relax, because I'm a highly skilled brain masseur. So allow me to begin by applying some balm on the brain that will help ease the pain of your mental rubdown today. I actually like Trump. Yeah, I know. He's clever. He's fun to listen to. He has a lot of very good ideas. There's no question about his ability to negotiate a deal. His business acumen is evident. He certainly knows how to play to an audience and to the camera. And there's no question about his passion and drive. Obviously, he is a capable manager, and I don't think any reasonable person doubts he could manage the presidency. Other things about Trump that are positive. He's an American citizen. Wow, now that's a plus these days. It's a safe bet that he's for free enterprise. Ostensibly, at least, he believes in a free market-driven economy. And with all of that, he seems to favor a less regulated marketplace. Somebody pointed out that he has been thoroughly publicly vetted, and that's a plus. I mean, he's not an unknown commodity like the old Bamster was. And as he has repeatedly reminded us, he's a billionaire and doesn't need to be beholden to any political faction for money in order to fund his campaign. And no question about it, he's truly a very rich guy. Allow me now to explain why I think it is appropriate to challenge Trump, and with that, debunk the arguments warning us against doing so. First, this idea that you should not criticize any GOP frontrunner because that might help the Democrats in 2016 is wrongheaded. It's wrongheaded for these reasons. First, right now, we're not choosing between a Republican and a Democrat. Right now, we're deciding who will run representing the Republican ticket. Conservatives ought to desire to put forward the strongest conservative candidate available to us, and we have several to choose from. Right now, the question is not whether we prefer Trump to Hillary or Cruz to Hillary, for that matter. The question before us at present is whether we prefer Trump to Cruz or Cruz to Huckabee and so on. What's that? Okay, I hear you. Let me speak to that. It's possible to beat up a candidate so badly during the primary that he goes into the general so bloodied the opponents on the other side are given a great advantage. Well, it certainly is true that the primary is not done in a closet. I mean, it's acted out in the national stage in front of God and everybody. Furthermore, if we pile on one or another of the GOP candidates, are we not likely to create such strong factions that we will go into the general divided with many conservatives too discouraged to bother to vote? Or who will withhold their vote in protest that their favorite was not nominated? Well, I suppose there are a few who are petty like that, but that, not enough to make a difference. But first, is there anyone out there who actually thinks the hilarity machine needs our help to trash Trump or any other of our candidates? You know, and when Hillary trashes the Donald, is he going to whine about her not treating him nicely? You think hilarity is not going to go after him on the exact same questions brought up by Megan? I mean, she did the guy a favor. And do you think Megan gave Hillary the idea? Oh, come on. Second, the GOP is already divided. In fact, that's one of the problems we face with the GOP right now. Look at the candidates before us. You got Jeb, Kasich, and as I will show, arguably Carson, Second Amendment issues, and Trump, also Second Amendment issues and other things. These are all Democrat light. Oops. I'm sorry. Yeah, that was a sensitive spot there, eh? I'll come back to that spot later. Let's let the soreness caused when I touched it just now to back off a bit, and then I'll come back and work it a little more carefully, and I'll explain why that I would lump Trump and Carson with the establishment conservatives. Now, folks, we are in a war over the definition of conservatism right now. Many have noticed that whether the White House and Capitol are controlled by the GOP or the DNC, government continues to grow. Babies continue to be murdered in the wombs of their mothers. Homosexuals continue to advance their agenda with the tacit support of these conservatives. And crony capitalism just gets increasingly embedded into the culture of politics in this country. There is a war over whether conservatism should limit its interest to fiscal issues or should they include concern for the social issues. The GOP is divided, although it may be true that any of the GOP candidates running in this election would be preferable to any of those put forward by the left. It is not the case that all of the current candidates equally represent conservative principles and values. And this brings me to my third observation. Some have reduced the issues simply along party lines. In other words, for some, it's about, you know, the GOP needs to win, the DNC needs to lose. No, no, no. It's about conservatism beating liberalism. It's about big government versus limited government. It's about traditional moral values versus perversion of our values and ethics. It's about constitutionalism versus socialism. It's about protecting individual and states' rights versus an ever-expanding federal government monstrosity, forging the people into a faceless, impersonal herd fed by the feds, housed by the feds, controlled by the feds. It's about respecting states' rights and local government immediately accessible by the people versus destroying the borders of our states and co-opting state government into the tyrannical control of the Fed. It's about continuing to feed the federal government's voracious appetite for control or leashing that monster under the restraints of the Bill of Rights and teaching that pit bull to heel to the law of our land, the Constitution, furthermore. It's about turning back to the founding principles versus progressing on to the hell God promised to every nation that forgets him. And for the sake of clarity, in case I have not yet been clear, all of that is to say, we have the greatest opportunity in my lifetime, I mean since Reagan, to put into the White House a man who will lead us to return to the founding values of our constitutional republic, and we would be fools not to take full advantage of this opportunity by aligning ourselves behind the truest champion for that cause that we have available, and avoiding the trap of sending someone up there that is nothing more than business as usual. And that would be Jeb, Kasich, Trump, and in some measure Carson, as I shall show. There is no conservative I know with sense who thinks Jeb is anything other than a big government conservative. Everyone with sense knows that Kasich has a serious leftward twitch and has not enough head to guide his sentimental heart. So I'm not going to bother with those guys just yet. Trump is out front, so he gets all the attention. That's just the way it is, okay? I used to run cross-country, and I know it's the guy in front that has our attention. If he does not understand that, well, he's not as smart as I thought he was. My point is that whom we pick in this primary is important to the future of our nation, so we should definitely get fully engaged in this primary. Not all of these Republican candidates are equally fit for the task at hand. To undo Obama's entrenched IEDs embedded throughout the government in his various appointments in civil and military bureaucracies, and reverse his tyrannical decrees by executive order to advance his socialist agenda in this country. So let's get specific here. Let's go ahead and begin with Trump's strong suit, and that's immigration. We definitely need someone who will stop the flow of illegals across our borders, address the onerous and ridiculous immigration policies that create near impossible barriers to legal immigration, stop illegals from having any access whatsoever to any services in this country paid for by our taxes, including education, medical, welfare, you name it. Nothing paid for with American tax dollars should be used to support anyone who is here illegally. End of discussion on that point, with one exception, and that's a bus ride back to Mexico, and then Mexico can deal with them from there. Build the wall and repair the door. You bet. And if you think Jeb or Kasich or even Carson is going to do this, you're not paying attention. And listen, this is not merely a fiscal issue. This is a national security issue. I don't know. I see you. I see you jumping up and down and hollering, Trump, Trump, Trump. But listen, Cruz has spoken to this also, and Walker has shown an ability to guide his sentiment with sense. And Paul, I probably don't have to say anything about that, but I have questions about Carson. He is opposed to deportation, and yet he says he wants us to use a guest worker program. Quote, with respect to immigration, Carson wants to incorporate a guest worker program modeled on the Canadian one. That's a guest worker program for jobs Americans don't want to do, seal the border, and accept applications only from applicants who are outside of our borders, end quote. And that from statements Carson made at the Iowa Freedom Summit, January 26. How are you going to set up a guest worker program as an answer to illegal immigrants that are here already and, quote, accept applications only from applicants who are outside of our borders, end quote, without deporting the illegals who are here already? Now, from his book, America the Beautiful, on page 102, he says, quote, is it moral for us, for example, to take advantage of cheap labor from illegal immigrants while denying them citizenship? I'm sure you can tell from the way I phrased the question that I believe we have taken the moral low ground on this issue. Some segments of our economy would virtually collapse without these undocumented workers. We all know that. Now, let me give you an aside here. Now, do we? Is that a little PC coming from Carson here on undocumented workers, eh? They're here illegally? Anyway, continuing the quotation from his book, quote, yet we continue to harass and deport many individuals who are simply seeking a better life for themselves and their families. Totally PC, dude. Man, we're not even deporting the criminals who are here illegally. Is there a way to apply logic? He goes on to say, is there a way to apply logic to this issue and arrive at an intelligent solution? Well, that would be refreshing. How about we begin with this, the logical fact that they're here illegally? Anyway, I keep going aside, I'm sorry. But continuing with his quote from the book, America the Beautiful, quote, all we have to do is look to our northern neighbor, Canada. They have a guest worker program which allows people to enter the country as officially recognized guest workers who pay taxes, receive benefits, and are able to come and go as they please without infringing on anyone else's rights, end quote. Now you see my problem with Carson. On one of the most critical issues we face today, he is vague and mushy-headed. You can't make a law that says the only people who can qualify for a guest worker visa is someone who applies from outside of our borders and then say, that somehow addresses the problem of the illegals who are here, unless you plan to deport them, but then say deportation is the moral low road in solving the problem. Yeah, you know what I mean? Carson offers more of the same feel-good PC non-solution rhetoric that does nothing in other areas, and he's very weak in foreign policy. But anyway, Trump trumpets, build the wall and make Mexico pay for it. All right, let's look at the solution. First, it's superficial. My friend, there is no basis for us to force Mexico to build a wall to protect our border. Okay? If Mexico is a bad neighbor, and I believe that they are, and not concerned with protecting our interests at their borders with us, well, get real. I mean, okay, if my neighbor has no interest in building a wall between our properties, the fact that I have an interest there does not give me the right to demand he pay for the wall. Of course, in our case, you know, we kind of go together and all that. I understand. Happily, I have good relations with my neighbors, and you know, come to think of it, I need to discuss with him some repairs I need to take care of because my dog broke down a segment of our fence. Anyway, better get on that. But you get my point. There's no reasonable argument except that we are ticked off with Mexico promoting illegal immigration into our country, you know, handing out flyers, explaining how to go about it, encouraging them to believe by coming across our borders they can get their hands on welfare and all that. And we know that the government over there has done stuff like that, but that makes them bad neighbors, and it might provoke a breakdown in relations between our countries. Okay, I can go there. But it does not provide a basis for the argument that Mexico should build a wall to protect our borders, all right? They should build a wall for them. We build a wall for us, or go together and build one. But that's not going to happen. They're not good neighbors. His answer for how he's going to compel Mexico to build a wall to protect our borders is to threaten to interrupt NAFTA, you know, North American Free Trade Agreement. And that's rather like his answer to China's unfair suppression of the value of their currency, which is tariffs. Oh, I'm getting more broad in my comments than I intended to. But interfering with NAFTA and imposing tariffs on Chinese imports have the effect of cutting off our own nose to the spite our face. The entire cost of these actions will ultimately fall on the American consumer. No doubt these actions will hurt China and Mexico, but it becomes becomes a game of who gets hurt the worst. There's another way to answer those things, and I don't have time to go into right now, but I will in a later show. It breaks down our idea that Trump is a believer in free trade, doesn't it? I mean, there seems to be a bit of the political correctness Trump decries in his fair trade mantra. Yet in his personal dealings, fair, I mean, it's not a concept to be found anywhere in his lexicon. It plays well with unions, and plays well for the cameras, and plays well as a populist position. Fair trade sounds, well, hey, fair, man, but when that means tariffs or restrictions on trade with Mexico, how is that fair to the American consumer who is the one that's going to cover the costs in higher prices for goods and services that will necessarily be the result of these sorts of actions? Oh, man, I'm out of time for this segment. I'll pick it up right here when I get back, but I'm just getting to work on this knot. You know, Trump's trumpet call for the wall and for tariffs on China are populist Trump cards he's using to play to the cameras. There's a duck in the Donald, and I'll expose it when I get back. Hold on to the break.
Pastor Scheidbach's been in Santa Maria since bumpers were chrome and phones were connected to the wall. Now he iPhones, texts, tweets, and podcasts the brain massage to over 100,000 subscribers. His series on the Bible and the Bill of Rights continues Sunday night at the Lighthouse. This Sunday night at 6 p.m., he will address the 9th and 10th Amendments. All the amendments are rooted in the Bible, and the Bible was here a long time before the framers came around. The founders did not dream up our rights. They found the source of our rights in God and His Word. Oppressors beware of a people who understand the truth about their divinely endowed rights. Sunday night, 6 p.m. at the Lighthouse. Come on out for some fun, food, and fellowship while we talk about our freedoms.
Stand by. Five, the Brain four, Massage Show three, is about two, to blow your mind.
Hello, my dear friends. Welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singing "The Enemy is on the March," an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. Let's look at the duck and the Donald. I explained why I believe it is appropriate to take on Trump in a direct way in the first segment, but in this segment, you will, I hope, appreciate why. We must do so. With Obama, we knew nothing about him. I mean, his associations with Marxists and domestic terrorists and all this kind of thing, all of that came out in the course of his campaign, but the liberals were so hungry for the un-Bush candidate, the anti-Bush candidate, they ignored all of that and went with Obama as a statement against Bush. With Trump, he's been in the public eye for decades, and we've been able to watch his antics for a long time. He was pro-choice for decades. His business dealings were covered in the smell and shady deals and manipulation of the bankruptcy laws for his personal enrichment. I mean, he has a reputation for being ruthless in his business dealings. And you know what? That might sound good to some of you, but wait a minute here. I mean, we're talking about someone who is willing to renege on obligations, dump debt legitimately owed, and walk away, leaving others holding the bag. And sorry, Trumpophiles, I don't trust a guy like that. There is no one Trump won't leave holding the bag if it benefits him to do so. I mean, no one. Not all of Trump's business dealings have gone well. And when they don't go well, he just dumps it all on others and walks away clean. Now, that tells me that if we get tangled up with Trump and things don't go well, he's going to leave this country holding the bag while he finds a way to save his own skin. I don't trust a man with that kind of character, with something so important as the office of the president. You know, he said once, if you owe the banks $200,000, they own you. But if you owe the banks $2 billion, you own them. Now, that might sound like a clever man who knows how to manipulate the system, and you might be thinking, well, that goes to show those evil banks. The banks loan money that you have on deposit with them? I don't have time to go into it except to say right now that the only losers in this sort of thing that Trump pulls is the lower-income people who always end up picking up the tab for this sort of thing. It shows up in higher banking costs distributed over the general population, so it's not felt in any particular way. But if you add up all the little bits and pieces and prices of commodities and services that is taken to cover losses created by guys like Trump and other thieves, it would blow your mind. It always finally falls on the poor. Theft at Walmart, for example, drives up prices so that the burden of the theft falls on the shoppers. And what else can they do? In order to make sufficient profit to pay employees, they have to cover the cost of loss through theft. So it gets built into the prices. Likewise, Obamacare, built into the taxes, built into the prices of everything. Likewise, double taxation by the government. Likewise, white-collar legal thieves like Trump. Now, he could say, hey, these guys left holding the bag. They're not your nice neighbor down the street and so on. The fact is, at the end of the day, it's the low guy on the totem pole who ends up carrying the weight of all the nonsense that goes on by those characters sitting on top of them. But listen, let's take this philosophy into the presidency, shall we? You know, this idea that if we owe China a few billion, well, they own us. But if we owe China a few trillion, well, then we own them. Excuse me? Will he drive up the debt with China farther on the principle that the more we owe them, the more we own them? Bible thump alert. Bible thump alert. The borrower is servant to the lender. Proverbs 22:7. Well, all we've done here is sell our children into slavery to the Chinese. We need to pay out of the debt. Will Trump use the bankruptcy move to dump our debt on China and walk away from it? What will that do to the credit of our country? And in what stead will that put our children before the nations of the world? Are we going to pull a Greece? What kind of manipulator are you thinking about sending into the White House? The manipulator in chief? My point with this is that Trump is a master negotiator. Okay, I give him that. With a marvelous talent for talking people into things. But he has a very bad quirk of pragmatic self-protection instinct. When a deal he has talked you into goes bad, watch out. He'll walk away and leave you twisting in the wind and never look back. He won't ask God to forgive him for anything. So let me summarize why I don't think Trump is the answer. He's a lot of bombastic bluster with a keen nose for populist issues and clever at capitalizing on them with political slogans. But I think he is weak on substance. I mean, compare his answers to questions regarding the particulars of his policies to those of Cruz. For example, Cruz outlined a series of steps he intends to take upon arrival at the White House, every one of them substantive, meaningful actions that would begin turning this ship of state around immediately. You compare Trump's dust-ups with the press to Cruz's intelligent rebuttals and substantive responses. I mean, there's no comparison here. Cruz's depth of knowledge on the issues makes Trump look and sound like a school kid as compares to the professor. For all his bombastic noise about the wall, well, what about the most important wall defending our liberties, the Second Amendment? Did you know that Trump believes that assault weapons should be banned? Quote, who needs them except criminals and police, end quote, he said. Furthermore, he wants longer waiting periods for the purchase of handguns, rifles, and shotguns. In other words, Trump doesn't have any real appreciation for the or understanding of the Second Amendment and the issues surrounding it. If you look at his recent statements regarding the Second Amendment, whoa, you'd think he's been a card-carrying member of the NRA for his life and has recently graduated from a front-sight training program there. And he appears to be keenly aware of the real issues. But which one is he? Is he a conservative? Is he? Do you know that for sure? I mentioned his position on gun control, but did you know this guy suggested running Oprah Winfrey as his VP? You're kidding me. Either he has a very frivolous idea of the office he's running for, or his conservative credentials begin to come into question. Did you know that back in 2000, he tried it out as a candidate for the Reform Party with a book titled The America We Deserve? He has been pro-choice forever, and I get that people can convert when they become aware of the truth about abortion and welcome him to the pro-life side, but his conversion narrative doesn't include anything like coming to the understanding that the baby in the womb is in fact a human being. It seems sentimental to me, and I'm afraid sentiment could move him back again unless he has come to the understanding that the baby in the womb is a human being with divinely endowed right to life. He told Tim Russert he would not ban partial birth abortions. He said, quote, my pro-choice instincts led me to say no, end quote. Now, he has since then come across to pro-life, but again, the reasons seem to be sentimental. Did you know he is in favor of a single-payer plan? In other words, he would abolish Obamacare in order to give Obama what he really wanted in the first place, a total socialization of medicine. I mean, he is sounding all conservative, but you're not listening. You're not paying attention. And when people try to go there, oh boy, they get slammed in a hurry. Is he conservative? He has advocated collecting a one-time 14.25% tax on all estates worth over $10 million. Now, that probably sounds fine to all of you who've never seen $1 million in your lifetime and never expect to. But will you please wait a minute? The question is this. Is Trump a conservative? If he can justify confiscating the property of those with $10 million or more, what is to stop him from justifying confiscating your savings or your investments in order to take care of the debt that this evil government has piled up onto the backs of our children? Which Trump am I supposed to be looking at here? The guy I've been watching for, 20 years? Or this new guy that's showed up? Am I looking at the man who supported Hillary for her Senate seat repeatedly? Who has donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to her political career and her foundation, which furthers her political career? Who is this guy? Rand said he buys and sells politicians as product to further his business agenda. And then Trump admitted it was true and justified it as good business acumen? This is a pragmatic manipulator who can justify anything he thinks he needs to do in order to further his interests. How do you trust a man like that? Who is this guy? Is that the sort of man I can trust to guide this country to the right? Apparently, he'll get in bed with anyone if it lines his pockets with profit. What sort of man is this? Who invites Hillary to his wedding, chums it up with the Clintons during his reception, obviously very warm and comfortable together, and who puts in a call to Clinton after Hillary announced and waits for Bill to call him back, and only after he's had a chat with Bill, with whom we have every reason to believe he's friendly, well, then he announces his own candidacy. I mean, come on. When are we going to start seeing what is put right in front of our eyes? There's every reason to suspect Trump is simply posturing himself to gain favor with the far right of the GOP, which would perfectly serve to split the party for the upcoming 2016 election. Why would I say that? Because that, my friend, is consistent with the character that Trump has established by his history. Now, here's the bottom line. Trump has demonstrated a lapse of good character and solid principled behavior in his personal and professional life. Now, I know that in our current environment, that does not present the formidable obstacle to public favor it once did. Today, thanks to the likes of his buddy, Bill Clinton, you can be a womanizing, cheating, lying scoundrel. And if you say what people want to hear, well, that's ignored. And my point is, that is exactly what we need to turn away from. We need to move away from that sort of candidate. I understand that all men have feet of clay and that there are no perfect beings on this planet. I get the fact that if we knew everything about any one of these candidates, there would be evidence of weaknesses. But there is to be a difference put between someone who makes a life out of cheating others to get ahead, or who built his fortune on manipulating the system, from those who have slipped here or there, but don't rationalize it and excuse it and make it a life policy. Trump has made leaving others holding the bag a policy of personal survival and rationalize it as something positive and good. Listen, this guy's a major risk taker, and by his own admission, he is very clever at escaping personal responsibility and the consequences that come with it when the risky move goes bad. I don't want a president who's inclined to risky behavior, and I sure don't want one who has shown us that he is only too willing to leave the American people holding the bag when and if he blows it. You might not agree with me, and that's fine. But let me ask you this. Do you really believe that in the lineup of choices available to us right now, Trump is the best man for the job? I hope conservatives don't make the mistake liberals made with Obama and fail to look at the man that's standing in front of you and see what's right there in front of your eyes. Trump is negotiating a deal with the American people, and he's going to say whatever he needs to say to close that deal. But just as he has done before, if the deal goes badly, you're going to be left holding the bag. I personally believe that Trump is the easiest candidate for his friend Hillary to defeat in 2016. You see, there is in the Donald the duck. The word duck means to shirk or dodge or evade or avoid, elude, escape or back out of, or sidestep or circumvent, or cop out of, or wiggle out of, or, and here's my favorite, to dipsy doodle around. He's walking behind the parade of true conservative candidates crying, Donald Duck, Donald Duck. And he's hollering so loudly, many of our conservative compatriots are focusing their attention on him and not paying attention, appropriately, to the real conservatives in this race. I mean, it's Mickey Mouse Jeb or Donald Duck Trump. Come on! Shake out of it and see what's in front of you. Cruz, Walker, Huckabee, and Paul. Those are the guys you should be looking at right now. They've got true conservative credentials. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch. Now you let me know that you see that they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000. And say lights on if you agree with what I'm saying. Lights off if you disagree. So what will it be today? Lights on or lights off? Express my opinion. I've told you what I think about these sorts of things. Now you call and let me know what you think about these sorts of things. 1-888-770-8000. Leave a message for me on our listener response hotline. I'll call you back if you ask me to. Or go to thebrainmassageshow.com. That's thebrainmassageshow.com. And you'll see right there a place where you can write me an email. God bless you, my dear friends. God save America. And I'll see you in church.
The Bible and the Bill of Rights continues. This Sunday night, Pastor Scheidbach addresses the 9th and 10th Amendments. Learn how the framers protected the rights that are not named in the Constitution. And what about the controversy over the 10th? Do states have rights anymore? Not only are Obama bots compromising our individual rights, they're also tearing down states' rights. This has to stop. This is not the design of the Constitution. Listen and learn at 6 o'clock, then speak your mind at 7. After the service, we'll meet for one of Helen's special desserts and talk it over. Sunday night, 6 p.m. at the Lighthouse.
For a complete brain massage experience, tune in Saturday at 12 noon.